Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 6, 2024, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Every year, Sarah Kelleher makes sure she emails me, and back when it was easier for us to get people on the show, we would interview people for this, but in the past couple of years since we've been at home, Sarah Kelleher emails me and with information about the Know Your Farmer Fair. I want to tell you about that. So it's the 9th annual Know Your Farmer Fair. Did you know that?
I knew that.
There's no charge for it. It's el 9 año de la feria para conocer a tu agricultor local.
But of course.
And el evento es gratuito. I just said the same thing I just said in Spanish. Okay. You can meet your farmers. You can shop the farmer's market. There's a farmer's market there. There will be a seed swap and local food trucks. You can ven a conocer a tu agricultor local. Podrás comprar en el mercado de los agricultores, probar comida local y participar en nuestro intercambio de semillas. It's Saturday, March 9th. From 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Willimantic Community Center. That's right, it was in the Willimantic Community Center last year. Now
That's
I remember
where
that.
It is this year.
It's el sábado, el 9 de marzo, 11 en punto hasta el 2, en el Willimantic Community Center. And that's at 665 Main Street, 665 R Main Street. It's in Gilson Square. You can find out more if you have the... If you have the poster, there's a QR code to find out more. But you can also go to grownconnected.org/KnowYourFarmerFair. It's sponsored by and patrocinado por the Wyndham Community Food Network, Grown Connected, Connecticut Grown, Farm Credit East, UConn, the Willimantic Food Co-op, Cloverleaf Farm, CT NOFA, and Russo's Roots. And our friend Susan Amy Hunter is a huge fan of Russo's Roots. So if they're going to be there, I'm excited because they supposedly have good veggies. So if they're selling veggies, we'll get some Russo's Roots.
Okay.
All right. So I'll just say it one more time. It's the 9th annual Know Your Farmers Fair. There's no charge to enter. You can meet your farmers, shop the farmers markets, do a seed swap, and local food trucks will be there. And it's the 9th of March, this Saturday coming, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's in the Willimantic Community Center, which is on Gilson Square, also 665 Main Street. You can find out more at grownconnected.org/KnowYourFarmerFair. And it's sponsored by all these great places. So we hope to see you there. Ron's going to be there. So what are you doing there?
I am working with the Town of Mansfield Farms to Families program.
Very nice.
And I will be interviewing farmers for potential for us to be able to purchase food from them for our weekly food drop program.
Nice. That's very excellent. I went last year. I seem to remember enjoying myself last year.
You were doing a Fran thing. You were bopping around and visiting with lots of people.
It was
and
fun.
You were eating lots of interesting foods.
And there was a food truck outside, and I think I got the food.
And there was also a food truck outside.
I can't remember which one.
It coincides with the weekly farmer's market at
the Willimantic Farmers Market.
In Willimantic. So.
Yes.
So it all works together.
So that'll be a nice event. It's also Amanda's birthday.
Right.
Yeah.
The other Amanda.
The other Amanda. Both Amandas are Pisces. What do you know about that?
It sounds fishy to me.
So our future daughter-in-law, Amanda Hiles, it's her birthday today. So big shout out to her. Happy birthday. And my friend and coach, Amanda Rossolimo, it's her birthday on Saturday, the Know Your Farmers Fair. So probably I should go to the Know Your Farmers Fair and pick up something for her.
Okay.
I wonder what she would like. You know what I really like
something
to get?
Something that's food and not an animal product.
Right. You know what I really like is pickled beets. I remember last year I got some pickled beets there, and they're delicious. Yeah. I've got some in the fridge. I think I'll eat some today. I have a thing for pickled beets. Go figure. Okay. So, big shout out to Sarah Kelleher for sending that out to me so I could talk about that. And, and we will get back to our regularly scheduled Radio Naturopath. Okay, so the next thing on the agenda is Ron had blood work done, and he wanted me to talk about his blood work. I actually am looking at this cold. I have not seen this blood work yet. So do you want to sit next to me?
I'm looking at it warm, because it's nice and warm in here.
Aww. And you can snuggle next to me, and we'll be nice
thing.
And warm together.
That's a good thing.
That's very nice.
And we can lift weights.
So so you went to, you went to Hartford Healthcare. You're the doctor that ordered this is a Hartford Healthcare person. So you got this out of MyChart. So it's a MyChart printout.
Right.
So I'm looking at it. And the MyChart printouts, may I say, they annoy me because look at how many results are on this page.
Oh, I know.
One. All right?
Right.
So
I know.
They really annoy me.
And
they print double-sided. Well, they print double-sided. That's actually better for the environment.
And they're extremely large.
But it's really hard to... Well, it makes it easy to read.
Well, that's because we seniors need large print. You know,
but the single-page thing is... When you go through Quest Diagnostics, if you go through MyQuest or, you know, you get the printouts that I get as a practitioner, they're very compact. If you have tons of lab results, they fit them all very easily and easily to read on.
Yeah, they don't do that.
So they don't do the it's MyChart. MyChart just does all the MyCharts. This is how they print out. So MyChart, you know that MyChart is an umbrella. It's a system that's used all over the country for various companies.
Sure.
So Hartford Healthcare. Sure. And you may wind up finding out that you have in your MyChart app, you might have three or four different companies that you log into that are all MyChart, and they all have different login and passwords, but they'll come up
in
your chart. So
yeah.
I have Hartford Healthcare, I have UConn, I have CVS, and I have Cologuard all in my app.
Right.
Yeah. So, and they all have different logins and passwords, but they're all under my chart.
Yeah, I have Hartford Healthcare, and I also have UConn because UConn did my heart surgery.
Yes, and UConn, my Hartford Healthcare, I don't think has two-step authentication, but UConn does. So, if my patients want to get me into their my chart on my computer, they have to be there because it's two-step authentication, so they have to tell me the code.
I don't know about
Harvard
that.
Healthcare doesn't do that. Yeah. So anyway, let's look at your lab results. So this is a thing I do. This is part of what I do.
You can start with the short one, which is the last page.
I order a lot of labs, and I interpret labs, and I usually look at them before the patient comes in. And so I take a look at it, and then I write, I make notes, and then I talk to the patient about it when they come in. All right. So we're looking at, the thing I'm looking at is your TSH, your thyroid stimulating hormone. So recall that thyroid stimulating hormone comes from your pituitary gland. I'm pointing to my pituitary gland on my live
pointing
web broadcast.
to her forehead if you're listening to
in
this
between
and not
just
viewing
just
this.
Above my nose, so in between my eyebrows specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's approximately, you go back a ways, and that's where your pituitary gland is. Okay, and so the pituitary gland the pituitary gland makes a lot of different hormones, and it makes hormones that stimulate other hormones to work. And one of the hormones it makes is TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone, and it stimulates your thyroid gland to work. So it watches over your thyroid gland. It responds to the level of thyroid hormone that's in your blood. So TSH is a quick and dirty measure of how well your thyroid is working. So a couple of years ago, I can't remember what year it was, but a few years ago, I took a look at Ron's TSH. He'd had it done by some primary care physician, and I looked at it, and it was 14, which is wicked high. That's really high. I'm like, Ron, you're hypothyroid. Not only are you hypothyroid, you're really hypothyroid. And I think we had tested his thyroid antibodies at some point. He doesn't have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, but his TSH is 14. So he was probably dragging and, you know, dragging around and tired and sleepy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, talk to your PCP. And that he did, and then he got put on levothyroxine, thyroid medication.
Right.
So he's been having his TSH monitored, and I have three values right here. I have one from March 8th, 2022, and one from exactly a year later, March 8th, 2023. That's International Women's Day. And then I have one from March 1st of 2024. All right. And so the one on March 8th is 3.63. So the interesting thing is, I, as a naturopathic physician, when somebody's TSH is over, even though the reference range for Hartford Healthcare is 4.5. So if you're over 4.5, it's considered elevated. When your TSH is elevated, that means your thyroid is underfunctioning. It's having trouble kicking out thyroid hormone. So, so when it's over 4.5, we consider it elevated. And if it's elevated, you then talk to the person and see if they have symptoms. If you have a TSH of 14, your doctor's probably going to want to give you medicine. But if you have a TSH of 5 and you're not symptomatic, they may not want to give you thyroid medicine. It's possible that you won't get it. But at 3.63, it's debatable. It depends on the person. At 3.63, I get concerned that somebody might have symptoms. So I always check with them when they're over, when their TSH is over 2.5. I ask them questions. Do you have thyroid issues? Do you have any thyroid symptoms? Are you sleepy? Are you sleeping a lot? Do you have itchy, dry skin? Are you constipated? Are you having any digestive problems?
No.
Are you having any brain fog, slow thinking, or anything like that? So there are symptoms of hypothyroidism that can be happening. And if the person does have symptoms, I might choose to treat it. At 3.63, I might choose to treat it with supplements. And we may have started, I don't know if we started with supplements or we just said, if it's 14, you have to get medicine. So anyway, at that time, on March 8th of 22, he was at 3.63. And I don't remember. It's 2 years ago. I remember how he was feeling. And then the last 2 years, March 8th of 23 and March 1st of 24, he's over 5. So he's out of range. He's 5.23 out of range and 5.54 also out of range. And we get concerned about him because weight gain is also a symptom of hypothyroidism. This is not a thing that happens with Ron. Ron's metabolism laughs at the thyroid hormone. And it's probably something like he just has a very efficient metabolism. And it may also be that if you have a lot of lipoprotein, LPL receptors, lipoprotein lipase receptors, if your lipoprotein lipase receptor population is largely on the muscles, on your smooth muscles, not your smooth muscles, your skeletal muscles, and you'd have very few on your fat cells. Anytime you eat, you're going to stimulate your muscles to burn and be active, so you're going to have a high metabolism. If your lipoprotein lipase receptors are evenly distributed between your fat and your muscles, you might be a little more have a little more tendency to gain weight. And if you have your lipoprotein lipase are predominantly on your fat cells, you're going to have a lot of tendency to gain weight. Anyway, so weight gain is not a thing for him. Constipation is not a thing for him. Itchy, dry skin. The other thing is you have that rash on your back.
I have itchy, dry skin all the time.
Right. So he does have some of that going on.
Yep.
And you definitely have been dragging.
Usually.
So the thing is, and because you take a lot of naps and you tire out easily. But, I mean, we don't know how much of that is because, you know, you're teaching 9 fitness classes a week.
It could be the 9 million classes.
The 9 fitness classes a week, and you have to get up very early in the morning to get to them.
Right.
And you go to bed.
You don't let me go to sleep at night.
You don't let you go to sleep at night either. I mean, there are nights when I'm home and we don't get in bed too late. And, we could go to bed earlier on nights that I'm not working.
But we tend not to.
I get home late on Tuesday and Thursday, but not the rest of the week. So we can work on that if you want to. Getting in bed, just winding down earlier in the evening. I'd be happy to do that. Because I need the extra sleep, too, because I got an immune situation going on. Somebody who's already on thyroid medication by another doctor, if they come in and they're over 5, I'm going to be like, definitely have a conversation about how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And if the answer is I'm dragging and sleepy and napping a lot, I'm like, all right, go see your doctor. Talk to them. You need to raise your thyroid dose.
So
go see your doctor. Talk to him about raising your thyroid dose.
Going on Thursday.
Okay, good. See Dr. Heyman, who has the same name as the villain from Purim, who we eat the Hamantaschen about.
He's not a villain. He's a nice guy.
So we have to give him a Hamantaschen again. All right. So the next thing I have here is a lipid panel. So it's your cholesterol. So the cholesterol we're concerned about, it has not yet been reviewed by care team. Well, one member of the care team is reviewing it, but I'm not official. Anyway, so your total cholesterol is 150. So anybody would be happy about that. It's less than 200, which is the reference range. And of course, you're taking Repatha, evolocumab, which is a PCSK9 inhibitor. And your total cholesterol sitting at 150, which, like I said, anybody would be happy with. That's well below the reference range for total cholesterol.
Total cholesterol is at 150, but if you add up my LDL and my HDL, it's lower than that. It's actually 138.
That's right. That's because you're not... The total cholesterol is the sum of LDL, HDL, and IDL. And VLDL. And that's not on here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's why the sum of HDL... You'll notice that if you add HDL to LDL, it's going to be less than your total cholesterol because it's not factoring in your IDL, intermediate density lipoprotein, and your very low density lipoprotein. So your intermediate density lipoprotein is another lipoprotein that carries cholesterol, and VLDL is a lipoprotein that carries triglycerides. So they figure into that number. So anyway, your number's fine. Then we go to your HDL. HDL is high density lipoprotein. It's the protein that carries cholesterol from the periphery, from the outside of your body, back to your liver for use. When you have high HDL, greater than 40, which is what the reference range is here, that's cardioprotective because it runs around your body pulling cholesterol out of circulation and takes it back to your liver. And so it helps to make you have less cholesterol in general circulation. That's HDL's job. So he has very nice HDL. 75 is a great number. I get people who have a hard time making HDL, and you are making HDL, which is very good. Then you have your triglyceride number. Triglycerides are supposed to be below 150. I start getting concerned when triglycerides are over 100. When they're under 100, I think it's great. So triglycerides are the form that fat takes when it flows through your bloodstream. And if you have elevated blood sugar, you're going to tend to have high triglycerides. If you eat a lot of sweets, you'll tend to have high triglycerides. The other way that you get triglycerides down is to get regular cardio exercise. He gets plenty of cardio exercise. She has beautiful triglycerides. They're perfect. And then we go on to your LDL cholesterol, which is low density lipoprotein. They call it the lousy cholesterol, which is stupid because cholesterol is necessary to life. Let's make that very clear. Cholesterol, if you had no cholesterol, you would die. You need cholesterol to build cells all the time. And the reason that you get muscle pain when you take cholesterol-lowering medications is because you use your skeletal muscles all the time. So you're always in a state of use and rebuilding of skeletal muscle cells. And so if you lower your LDL cholesterol, you don't have as much cholesterol available in circulation to rebuild your muscles. And that's where the joint pain and muscle pain and body aches come from when people are on statins and other cholesterol-lowering medications. For your average person who has no known cardiovascular disease, the reference range is less than 100, and that's the reference range that's written on this sheet. For people who are, and it says here, desirable range is less than 100 milligrams per deciliter for primary prevention, less than 70 milligrams per deciliter with cardiovascular disease or diabetic patients with greater or equal to 2 cardiovascular heart disease risk factors. So he qualifies because he already had coronary artery disease, and he had a coronary artery bypass graft. So he qualifies for the less than 70. And what his doctors keep telling him is in Europe, they want you to be under 55. So he is below the American value of 70 at 59. And so that should make them very happy. Although you've had your cardiologist say to you, he wants you to be below 55, right?
Yeah.
which
yeah,
is...
Yeah, the European standard, as
which
they
is,
call it.
Which I think is lousy. I mean, so the thing is...
Low.
The thing is, you had a lot of symptoms, and then you have your cholesterol to HDL ratio, which is your total cholesterol over the total cholesterol on top, the HDL cholesterol on bottom. You get a ratio from that, and it's 2, and it's wonderful. That's really, really good, because you have low, your ratio is going to be really low, because your total cholesterol is 150, and your HDL is 75, and that comes out to 2. That's great. So that it's supposed to be less than 5, and you're at 2. It's terrific.
Yep.
So anyway, the problem is this LDL cholesterol is super low. So when you used to take statins, you used to get a lot of body aches and joint pain,
mm-hmm.
and it was so bad that you were unable, and you not only that, you were not able to use your muscles effectively. They didn't function effectively, and you were not able to work out on your bike the way that your fitness would allow you to.
Correct.
Right. So that was a problem. So they took you off statin, and you also took ezetimibe. And ezetimibe, so statins
that,
are HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, and statins block an enzyme that produces cholesterol in your body. And so that's how statins work. And the thing is, you're not going to make cholesterol as efficiently. And so your cholesterol numbers go down because of the fear that cholesterol is going to block your arteries and give you coronary vascular or cerebrovascular disease. But the problem is, not only is it not available to block your arteries, it's not available to rebuild your cells, which you need all the time. And as we get older, it's harder for us to rebuild our cells because we have less estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone as we get older. And, you know, I'm 60, he's 68, going to be 69 soon. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And so we're at that age where it's harder to rebuild your cells. So if you then take a drug that blocks that, please go get me a glass of water.
Okay.
If you take a drug that blocks that... Then it's going to be harder to rebuild cells. So that's why people get body aches and joint pain when they're taking any kind of cholesterol lowering medication. So because he didn't do well on the statins, he felt miserable on the statins. They tried him on ezetimibe, and ezetimibe has a different mechanism of action. Ezetimibe causes you to excrete more cholesterol through your digestive system. So when he took the ezetimibe, he had awful side effects there too. And what happened to him is he would get up in the morning and he would try to straighten his legs while getting out of bed, and he couldn't do it. So it was really bad. So he stopped the ezetimibe too, and they put him on Repatha, evolocumab, which is a PCSK9 inhibitor. So PCSK9 inhibitors, they have a different mechanism of action. Thank you so very much. So now he's on this Repatha, PCSK9 inhibitor. The nice thing about it is it's an injection, and it's once every 2 weeks, so you don't have to take it every day. And the way the PCSK9 inhibitor works is that you have PCSK9 is an enzyme that breaks down LDL receptors in your liver. So when you have a PCSK9 inhibitor, it blocks the breakdown of those receptors. So when your blood passes through your liver, you have more LDL receptors to grab onto low-density lipoprotein. It pulls LDL out of circulation. And so you'd think that would be a good thing. So it's not blocking your production of cholesterol. It's merely it's taking cholesterol out of circulation. But eventually that can be a bad thing too, because you don't have enough cholesterol going around to repair your muscles, repair your cells, repair the inside of your nose, whatever. So he was doing very well with it. And he was doing much better on the Repatha than he was doing on the statins and the ezetimibe, right? So
yeah.
You're feeling a lot better.
I definitely, up until recently.
Okay,
yes.
So you have to tell us. Yeah, you can pull that over if you want.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
if you we're having yes, we're moving the curtains around here. Okay, so
that better?
Yes, it is better. So what's happening with you with the Repatha now?
I feel like I'm having leg issues again.
Okay,
I'm having you know, hard recovery on my quads, and also shortness of breath at the top of the stairs when I go to the community center. And it's all associated with shortness of breath and then aching quads.
And
at the
mind
same
you,
time.
You're teaching 9 fitness classes a week, 8 of which involve spinning.
That's correct.
Yeah. So like, and the thing is, I feel like if somebody wants to be an athlete and that's what they want to do, they should be able to do that.
Right.
So this is an issue. So now you're up, you're on to this other cholesterol-lowering medication, and now you're starting to get issues.
Right.
So you're
and then the other things that I'm getting, just to add into all that, is right. I'm getting a very, very dry mouth. Mm-hmm. My mouth is always dry.
Yeah.
I've got, I also have, what were some of the other things that I was having that are on the symptoms list? A forever runny nose, flu-like symptoms is what they call it, as one of the side effects. And all of this was not so bad up until, that seems to be about a month ago.
Wow.
And about a month ago, all of a sudden, the things that were no longer, were not a problem, are now becoming a problem.
Right.
So, and that's an interesting thing, because when I was taking statins, a similar thing happened. And it seemed like over time, as your body starts to adjust to, and this is my theory, and I have no facts to base on this, but my theory is over time, your body starts adjusting to it, and then it starts having reactions.
I don't think adjusting is the right word. I think the word is decompensate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then fine, whatever it is. But so, something happens over time, and it gets not so good. So anyway, I don't know what to say.
So that's called, so it's not adjusting, so it's de-adjusting, it's decompensating. That's what it means. It means that you, over time, you have this level of cholesterol. So again, PCSK9 inhibitors do not block you from producing cholesterol. They don't block HMG-CoA reductase. So you continue to make cholesterol. But so you kick out cholesterol into your circulation. It's just that when the blood passes through the liver, you have these extra PCSK9 inhibitors that grab onto the cholesterol. And over time, when you don't have a lot of cholesterol in your body, which cells are affected by cholesterol? Which cells in your body have cell membranes?
All of them.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So it can affect any cell in your body. And so the known side effects of Repatha are these flu-like symptoms. So what's probably happening is it's affecting your respiratory system. Your respiratory system is something that's impacted all the time, because what do you do with your respiratory system?
Breathe.
Yeah. Okay. And when you breathe, you have cilia in your nose, right?
Okay.
You know what cilia are?
Those little hair-like
things,
right?
And so why do you have cilia in your nose?
To filter.
You got it.
Right.
You know where else you have cilia?
Probably in your lungs.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what happens when you smoke to those cilia?
They get all messed up.
They don't function.
No.
Right. And so when you stop smoking, you cough your lungs up because the cilia wake up and they help you. Anyway, so cilia are little hairs. And what happens to hairs? Hairs have a growth cycle. They grow and they fall out. Then you grow a new one, right?
Yeah.
What happens if you have cholesterol and you can't make new cells and you can't make new cilia follicles?
Yeah.
You don't have as much cilia.
Right.
All right. So that's one thing, okay? Your respiratory tract is impacted by anything you breathe in. And what do you have on the lining of your respiratory tract? And I don't expect you to know this.
I don't, so tell me.
You have immune globulin A. Why do you have immune globulin A there? Because you need an antibody there protecting you from the outside world. Because the goddess knew that when she made us, that that we were going to breathe stuff in and we needed protection from it. So your body has this first-line immune system in your respiratory tract. Well, guess what? You're breathing in all kinds of stuff from the environment, including things that cause oxidative damage. So if you can't rebuild your cells and you're continuing to breathe, how dare you breathe?
Mm.
You continue to breathe.
I need to breathe.
Right. And so you're going to breathe in oxidative stuff because, you know, we don't live in a perfect environment. Ron and I are not the best cleaners. He messes around with a wood stove. And we're in the world, there are cars outside, so we're breathing in things that cause oxidative damage. in the environment. So guess what? You can't rebuild your respiratory tract the way you're supposed to. So your respiratory tract's like, I'm damaged. I have it looks at the damage and it creates an inflammatory response. What's the inflammatory response? It's your chuch. Your runny nose. Are you getting a cough as well as a runny nose?
Yeah.
So your respiratory tract is trying to...
It's nothing major. It's just there.
But your respiratory tract's having a little bit of trouble keeping itself in check because you're having a hard time rebuilding the cells in your respiratory tract. So that's another symptom that you're having. What's another side effect that you were concerned... So I haven't finished looking at this. So before I say anything, let me keep going. Let me look at the rest of your labs. So we did your cholesterol, and you were concerned about your blood sugar.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in there.
So your fasting blood sugar, it's right here.
Oh, okay.
It says glucose. Your fasting blood sugar is perfect.
Okay.
It's not elevated at all, thank goodness. So it's perfectly fine. It's 86. It's great. Well within the reference range. It's not too low. It's not too high. Your blood urea nitrogen is a little high. It's 26. It's supposed to be less than 25. Let's see what your GFR is. Your GFR is beautiful. It's 93. Your creatinine is 0.89. So your BUN creatinine ratio is a little bit high because your BUN is a little high. So blood urea nitrogen is a breakdown product of protein, and you're supposed to break it down, and it comes out you'll see it in the blood. It comes out your urine as well.
Kidney function, right?
You got it.
Right.
So if you see a blood urea nitrogen that's a point out of range, you then look at the GFR and the creatinine. You see the creatinine is almost at the bottom of the range and the GFR is perfect. Then you go, you know what you did when you were busy not eating that whole time? You probably didn't drink enough. So you were a little dehydrated when you had your blood drawn. So you just have to make sure you hydrate. So what you do when you get your blood drawn is if somebody's like, oh, you have stage 3 kidney disease, it may be because you didn't drink enough before your blood draw. And we always try to tell people don't always understand this, but people, we don't always tell people, we try to tell people, you have to fast overnight, but that does not include water. Please drink water. Drink water throughout the night. Carry a water bottle with you to the blood draw and keep drinking right up to the draw. Did you do that?
Yes.
Oh, all right. So...
I did.
So then you have to keep an eye on your blood urea nitrogen. We'll just keep an eye on it. Yeah. But you were worried about your blood sugar. Let's look at the rest of this. This is a comprehensive metabolic panel.
But so, I might have been dehydrated. I am always urinating. It's constant. And that's another rapatha problem, too. I'm having a frequency issue, yeah.
You also have low sodium. So you should eat more salt.
My God, I salt stuff so heavily.
All right.
I will continue to focus on that, but yeah. I'm a heavy salter.
And you remember the electrolyte drops that we have on the counter there. You should use when you're drinking water, you should have them in there all the time.
And I have electrolytes every time I teach a class.
Yes, but you should have them in your day-to-day.
Right.
So, like when you drink, if you have a glass of water on the desk.
In addition to.
Yes, this glass of water that you brought me, if you're drinking a glass of water like that, you should put electrolyte drops in there. Because if you're urinating a lot, but you're also probably overhydrating because you're so thirsty because your mouth is dry.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you put electrolyte. And if you do electrolytes, guess what? You'll hold on to the water. You'll absorb the water better.
Okay.
So for your class, you can use the electrolytes that have a bit of carbohydrate in them.
Yeah.
But during the day, don't use that. You should use the electrolyte drops that are just electrolyte drops.
Sure.
And if you want to flavor that water at all, use real fruit. Use a slice of lime or a slice of lemon or a piece of orange.
I don't care about the flavor.
Okay. So just drop some electrolyte drops into your water because salt and sugar, the reason you do electrolyte drinks is because salt and sugar help you to absorb water faster. You absorb it better than plain water. So you'll absorb it better. Your chloride's fine. Your sodium's a little bit low. And then this BUN is a little bit high. That you have to keep an eye on. If you're telling me you're super hydrated and you brought water with you to the draw, that's a little bit concerning. So could the medications be affecting your kidney function a little tiny bit? Your BUN is a little bit high, but your GFR is your glomerular filtration rate. That's the rate at which your kidneys filter stuff. is 93. It's great. That's not problematic at all. And your creatinine is low, so that's good. So that's fine. Then the rest of your electrolytes, potassium, chloride, CO2, calcium is fine. Your total protein is on, it's low normal, interestingly. And that's okay. You can maybe eat a little more protein. And you're, I think you feel like you eat amazing. Enough protein. Well, you know what it is? Your globulin is a little bit low. That's interesting.
What does that mean?
So globulin is, that's your total immune proteins. So that may be why your protein is low, because you have low globulin.
Okay.
And I wonder if your Repatha suppresses globulins at all. Because you have these flu-like symptoms, so I'm wondering if it's the Repatha suppressing your globulins.
Huh.
And that's why your protein is, it's not because you're not eating protein, it's because you have low globulin. The globulin is a blood protein.
So we'll write that down and I'll ask my PCP.
Yes. Then we look at your liver enzymes. So this stuff is not affecting your liver enzymes at all, thank goodness. Your AST and your ALT are perfect. So that's aspartate aminotransferase and alanine aminotransferase. These are liver enzymes. So your liver has activity. It does stuff all the time. And it will spill some of its enzymes into your blood. And there's a normal amount. There's a reference range for that. And if it gets over the reference range, you worry that you have breakdown of the liver cells, and there's inflammation in the liver. So he's perfectly fine. Also, bilirubin will spill into your blood if you have liver inflammation. Mm-hmm. And his bilirubin is perfect. Your alkphos is a little bit low, and alkphos will tend to run low. You have to be careful. I mean, if you have a very low alkphos, that can be a problem, and there is a genetic problem of hypophosphatemia. And in all my years, I have one patient with it. I actually saw a patient who had that, and it's very, very rare. But if you have, like, the reference range is 35 and you're 33, sometimes people who are skinny, that you'll see a low alk phosphatase. It's much more concerning to have a high alk phosphatase. That usually means you have some kind of bony breakdown and you possibly could have cancer. So I wanted to see your cholesterol, not your cholesterol, your blood sugar, because one of the other symptoms of Repatha is that
high blood sugar
and type 2 diabetes. But you don't have that.
Seem to be going.
It's not an issue for you. But why would that happen? Well, again, because you have low cholesterol. So when you have low cholesterol, you don't have the ability to rebuild your cells. And one of the things you need in order for sugar to get out of your bloodstream and into your cells is well-functioning cell membranes. And what do you need for well-functioning cell membranes?
I don't know.
Cholesterol. Yes. So if your cholesterol is too low, you can't rebuild your cells. So your cell membranes are not going to be as built as well. And so insulin is not going to be as easily bound. And your blood sugar can go up. And that can lead to type 2 diabetes. They didn't measure your hemoglobin A1C. Hemoglobin A1C is a measure of the level of damage to cells as a result of high blood sugar. Specifically, it measures the percentage of your red blood cells that are glycated. That means they have, the hemoglobin has a sugar molecule attached to it. When sugar molecules attach to proteins, it makes them brittle and it makes them break. So you can get wrinkles from eating too much sugar. I don't know what my deal is. I don't have a lot of wrinkles, but I take a lot of antioxidants. That's probably it. And I'll talk about some of my latest antioxidants. I think I'll talk about those new antioxidants next week, because got a lot to cover here. All right. So high blood sugar is something that can happen with any cholesterol lowering medication. The reason being that you can't adequately create new cell membranes. If you don't have enough cholesterol, you're not going to have as much insulin receptors. The insulin can't bond and allow sugar to get into the cells. So you can become more insulin resistant. You don't have as many insulin receptors because you don't have well-functioning cell membranes. So that's your labs. So that was an interesting topic to talk about.
Yeah.
What's going on with your labs. Okay. So I had a question, and the question came from the environment. The person didn't write to me. He just asked me a question when I was at the co-op. So I was wandering through. I was checking out at the co-op, and Chad, good old Chad, came up to me. Chad, the artist, who I adore. He's somebody who you'll see Chad if you go to the Romantic Food Co-op, and he's an artist. Has Vulture Town Press, and he's a very interesting person, very lovely person. Anyway, he said to me, "Hey, Fran, do you find that riding your bike aggravates your sciatica?" And I said, "Well, that's an interesting question." And I told him that I do a lot of yoga, and he said he does the same. So I didn't get into it with him because he was busy and I was busy. So I didn't talk to him too much about it. So I don't know if he's actually having some sciatica that he's noticing when he rides his bike that it makes it worse. So that begs the question, can riding a bike make your sciatica worse? The thing is, if you have a very acute situation with sciatica where your sciatic nerve is currently pinched and you get on a bicycle and it makes it worse, you probably shouldn't do that. "Doctor, when I do this, it hurts, so don't do that." So can it make it worse? The answer is yes. Can it make it better? Also yes. So it depends on what the situation is. If you get on your bike and you feel like the position that you get into on your bike improves your sciatic symptoms, then probably what's going on. So let's back up and talk about what the deal is with sciatica. So what can happen is, so first of all, the sciatic nerve, it's not actually one nerve. It's the tibial and common peroneal nerves in the sciatic nerve sheath. And the sciatic nerve sheath arises from the nerve space, the vertebral spaces, the intervertebral spaces between lumbar vertebrae 4 and lumbar vertebrae 5 and lumbar vertebrae 5 and sacral vertebrae S1. So it's between L4, L5, and L5, S1. And that's your center of gravity. So a lot of gravity goes on L4, between L4 and S1. So that's why a lot of sciatica is probably the most common nerve to get impinged in people's legs and backs because it's so easy to happen. I mean, I personally have lumbar disc degeneration, and I've had sciatica a couple of times. As you know, the thing I've been dealing with more recently is femoral nerve. So number two is your femoral nerve, because femoral nerve arises from between L2 and L4. L2, L3, L4, that's where the femoral nerve arises. So when you have nerve pain that goes to the front of your leg and your quads, the femoral nerve takes care of the front of your legs. The back of your legs, your hamstrings, and then so the sciatic nerve arises from between L4 and S1, and it comes out, it goes through your... it wraps around your hip. That's not right. It doesn't wrap around your hip. It goes down into your buttocks, and it goes past the piriformis muscle. And the piriformis muscle is a very strong muscle whose job is to laterally rotate your foot. And it's inside your buttocks. Anyway, your sciatic nerve may go over it, under it, or in between it, and it's much worse if it goes in between it. If it bisects the piriformis muscle, because then you're much more likely to get sciatica if that's an issue, and that's arising from a tight piriformis muscle. So if you relax and loosen the piriformis muscle, you can sometimes alleviate sciatica. So the sciatic nerve, as I said, arises from your lumbar spine, goes through your butt, and then it goes down the back of your leg and innervates your hamstring muscles. And then it wraps around the outside of your leg and goes down the outside of your shin down to your foot. And that's why if your sciatica is really bad, you'll get foot drop. So riding a bicycle, I think riding a bicycle, it's fraught, because on the one hand, there are people who say, "Oh, my back pain is so much better when I ride a bicycle," because you are putting yourself in a position where you're strengthening your core, and then you're getting a lot of circulation going through. The other side of that is that if your position isn't quite right, you can actually mess up your back, and Ron is interested in having a bike fitting to take care of that problem. And so it depends. So one of the things to do is you have to make sure that if you're on a bicycle, that you make sure that it fits you properly, and it is worth it to go and get a bike fitting if that's something you're interested in doing. A person who does a bike fitting is going to make sure the ratios of angles of your saddle to your handlebars to your pedals and all of your body parts are in the perfect angle for you. And a bike fitting takes a long time. How long does a bike fitting take?
Well, it depends on who's doing the fitting, but it could take as much as 3 hours.
Yeah. So they put on some good music and you have a good chat, and it's kind of, hopefully you like your bike fitter so you can have a good chat and catch up on stuff. Yeah. And it's a very interesting process. I had one of those many years ago by a lovely woman named Robin. Yeah. And it was a neat experience, and it was on my Pinarello. So I've never had a bike fitting on my Bianchi.
No.
Oh, well.
But we use the numbers.
We use the same numbers that Robin gave us.
And that's the thing. Once you get the fitting, you can use the same numbers from one bike to another bike.
Although your body changes over the years.
But that is the problem.
Yeah.
And my body has, the last time I was fitted was, over 20 years ago.
Right.
So I am...
You're
less
due.
Flexible than I was.
And yes.
So that I've got that going on.
So you're due.
And so, it's just I'm thinking that it wouldn't be a bad time.
Not a bad time.
Get it done.
Okay.
But, it's expensive. And, it's not entirely necessary.
No.
And I've also been doing some work lately on my lower back, which has been super helpful.
Yeah.
And I have been working on my gluteus medius. Which apparently your gluteus medius has a lot to do with your lower back pain.
Oh.
If you have lower back pain. Mm-hmm. And if you can strengthen your gluteus medius, which most people don't do, mm-hmm. then it'll help relieve the pressure on your lower back.
What's an exercise you can use to strengthen your gluteus medius?
So what I do is I do something that I got from a physical therapy site because I was looking for a legitimate way to do this. And it's simply, there's a couple different ways of doing it. You can either lay on the floor and lie on your side and then lift one leg away from the other leg. So like a scissors.
You're abducting your
leg. Okay, so you're abducting your leg out and back down, and mm-hmm. you do repeats of that. Or you can do it standing. It's better if you can do it standing because you're also working on your balance at that point. And the key point, though, is you have to remember to keep your body completely upright, straight upright. You can't lean to one side when you do this. And then you simply lift one leg away from the other one out to the side and bring
again,
it back
abduction.
In.
Yeah.
Right. And you do a set of 8 on each side about 3 times a day. And
3 times a day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they say, when I first started doing it, I was told it was informed by that information that you probably shouldn't do it 3 times a day, but eventually work up to 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Because your gluteus medius gets really sore, and your gluteus maximus gets very sore.
I don't think you should do it every day.
I do them every day.
So remember we talked about rest? You were probably talking about rest last week on your show.
Right.
You need to recover from that. It's probably, I don't like to do those kinds of exercises every single day, like very targeted exercises. I like to have some space, maybe 2 to 3 times a week, just because you want the muscles to rest and relax and recover. As you know, when you recover and rest from exercise, you're more effective the next time you do it.
Oh, sure.
Because you can tire out the muscles if you do them every day, So I probably would do those. Have at least a day of space in between them, more than 4 times a week, but maybe more like 2 to 3.
And I won't always do 3 sets a day.
Yeah.
I'll do maybe 1 set.
Well, you could do
day.
A set of exercises and cycle through the set of exercises and do 3 sets if you want to.
It is making me realize a lot more about my gluteus maximus and my lower back is better.
Right.
It's definitely a lot better.
That's good.
And
it's your gluteals, as well as your hamstrings. You have tight hamstrings that pulls on your lower back, and of course yoga stretches can help with that. And then of course if you have tight quads, tight hamstrings, then that's going to pull on your lower back as well. If you have tight hamstrings, that can lead to sciatica because it can cause pressure on that sciatic nerve in the back of your legs. If you find that, so it all depends what's going on. So could cycling aggravate sciatica? Sure, especially if it's very acute. It alleviate sciatica? If you get on the bike and you feel better, then yes. Mm-hmm. I really think that when you ride a bicycle, You owe it to yourself to also do strengthening exercises and also do stretching exercises, because if you want to become inflexible, ride a bike. It is probably one of the worst exercises for flexibility.
So I have one other thing I've been working on and focusing on too, and that is because I'm teaching a spin/yoga class, I've been focusing a little bit more on forward folding from the pelvis.
Yes.
Instead of just bending over like a lot of people do.
Right.
You don't want to bend over. That's really bad. So I do more of a forward fold, and even when I'm doing the stretches, even the hamstring stretches and other things after class, I tell people to bend from their pelvis.
Yeah.
And I'm also doing it while I'm sitting on the bike, because I'm finding that I just hunch over on the bike. I don't forward fold on the bike.
Right, you don't hinge at your
pelvis. And forward folding on the bike changes your position on the seat and also changes the power that you pull through with. And it's hard to hold a forward fold.
Well, and that's where your core comes in. That's where you want to do your core exercises, because then you can hold that hinging forward.
Correct.
So if you want to practice hinging forward, you can do a standing forward fold where you pinch from your pelvis and you fold over double at your waist.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you can touch the floor, or you can hold on to your either elbow.
And it's okay to bend your knees.
And not only is it okay, it's encouraged.
It's probably better.
And because the point of the forward fold is not to strengthen your quads. The point is to traction your back.
Right.
So if you bend your knees and relax, you'll be able to traction your back better. That's what the forward fold is for. It's for tractioning your back.
Right. Well, it's making a big difference for me.
Also do caterpillar pose, which is a yin yoga pose. It's where you you sit upright and you do with your legs straight out in front of you.
Right.
And you can flex your feet. Right. And then you, as you said, hinge from your pelvis. Mm-hmm. And you can hinge from your pelvis and hold forward if you want to. And you can also do the yin pose where you don't have to worry about hinging. You just let yourself dangle. And that stretches what's called the entire posterior chain. Do you know what the posterior chain is?
I'm about to find out.
Posterior chain is your entire back from the crown of your head through your entire spine all the way down to your legs and your feet.
Right.
It's the whole posterior chain. So the caterpillar pose can be really helpful. And yes, you can do caterpillar pose by simply hinging forward. And you can also do it as the yin, because with the yin, it's easier to hold it for a long time and you'll stretch out your hamstrings that way.
And in addition to that, too, if you have trouble being in that position, which is a difficult position for some of us who are really stiff, sit on a blanket, roll over a blanket.
Yes, you can sit on a blanket. Absolutely.
And elevate yourself ever so slightly off the floor, and it makes a huge difference.
Any pose, if you have difficulty with any pose, what do you do with the pose? You modify it.
Props.
Absolutely. You modify it. So the thing is, who gets the better stretch? The person who can touch their head to their legs, or the person who can only come over a little bit because they're not flexible? Who gets the better stretch?
It's the person who can only come over a little bit is going to get good a stretch, right?
No, the answer is doesn't matter.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Because if you're flexible enough to come all the way forward, mm-hmm. then that's what you do. And if you're not, you still come forward as much as is helpful for you. And everybody gets the same stretch. You just come forward as much as is helpful for you. So the best thing you can do when you're doing any kind of pose, yoga and stretching and Pilates and what have you, is to do it in a way that works for your body. For yoga, the most important thing in yoga is not the pose, it's the breath. All the poses are containers for the breath. If you go to a yoga class and you lie down and you spend the entire class in Shavasana, that's your practice that day, it's fine. I've had teachers say that. I mean, it'd be a little weird, but so what? Who cares? It's your practice. When you look around a room, you should see all different bodies and all different body types and everybody doing the poses in different ways that work for them. There is no shame in doing a pose in a way that works for you. In fact, you get kudos for it. Pushing yourself to a place that of pain and that doesn't work for you isn't good for you. So you do the pose in a way that absolutely works for you. So I guess that was the interesting question. What does riding a bike aggravate sciatica? What you have to do, you have to front load by making sure you stretch a lot and you do stretching and strengthening exercises so you don't come to that point. But sometimes life happens and you get sciatica too. And there are some theories about sciatica that sciatica could be viral. Sciatica could also be Lyme disease, that there are you have inflammation in your body that's going after your discs if they're weak to start with. So viruses can go after it. That's why elderberry is an old nature cure for sciatica. One reason could be because of the wonderful anthocyanins, and that's one reason I take it every day. Because of the wonderful anthocyanins that are antioxidant, and also because it's an immune tonic, elderberry will go after viruses. And I've been exposed to Epstein-Barr, and so I've tested myself, and I may have some Epstein-Barr. I definitely have antibodies. So Epstein-Barr can go after anything. It can go, and it can certainly go after your discs. But and I also have, I'm dealing with chronic Lyme and Bartonella, so. So anyway, so those were great questions. So we had a great day today. We talked about Ron's blood work. We talked about cholesterol. <lot. laughs> We talked about, don't forget that you can go to the Know Your Farmer Fair, which is this Saturday coming. Yay. From 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Wilmanta Community Center. Good time had by all. Mm. So hopefully we'll see you there. It's at Gilson Square.
You really should know your farmer.
And you should know your farmer
because you should eat only good food.
They make your food for you, so right. You should get to know your farmer.
Right.
So I'm going to go now. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Yep.
You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org.